Says Zoom meeting. Says you're the only one.
That's possible. Thank you.
Is that the way it looks?
No, let me just sit down. I can't tell you now because I don't know.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. I can't see you because there's something wrong here.
Okay, hold on. I see you. I do not see you, Linda. It's Linda Gordon. Hello.
Hi, Linda Gordon. It's Linda Perlstein.
There's a Linda group. I keep telling you about it. I found something the other day in one of my files. My friend Linda in Delaware had sent me. So
okay. I'd like to know more about that as soon as I figure out what happened. Howard fished my computer, so I can't use it at all now.
I can't hear you. What?
Howard fished my computer, so I can't use it at all now. He fished it, and I can't use it. It's just, he did something to it, and I can't get the picture. I hear the voice.
I see your picture.
I don't. I'm on my emails now because I'm trying to get. What do I do?
Okay.
Oh, I see you. Maybe I'm here.
Yeah. I need to get my pen. I take notes when she talks so that I have things for later.
Okay, there's just two of us, so that's fine.
Anyway, it's nice to... Here, let me get back here. Let me get coffee. So...
I guess we're the only two here so far, huh?
Pardon me?
We're the only two attendees right now.
Well, that's right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. There's
coming. Oh, good morning, Phyllis.
Morning.
Happy spring.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's not snow. We're good.
Yeah. Hi, Joanne.
Hey, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm okay. Lovely day.
How was just
yeah.
It's a good day to be in.
Yes.
From an allergy standpoint, it's lowered the tree pollen, even temporarily, is a good thing.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. We're going to have a late spring here with the April where things might turn around, but tomorrow's supposed to be cold again, and then, you know.
Next week's supposed to be beautiful, all mid-60s.
Yeah.
Where, in Yuma, Arizona?
No. It'll be warmer than that there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be here, hopefully. Yeah. I'm ready, you know.
We'll hold you to it, Joanne.
Yeah, I always say I think winter should be winter, but I'm ready now for spring. It's time for spring. We're done with winter. So
trees are starting to have their buds, and they say the cherry blossoms are supposed to bloom between April 1st and the 5th. My neighbors have cherry trees next door. I can just look there, and there's a couple up the street. So,
morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, there you are.
The rain is good. That's all right.
What happened here?
Canta Carol?
Forgot?
Hi.
Hi.
Didn't see your face.
Oh.
I just wanted to say that
somebody is sharing their screen. We're going to undo that.
That last Friday night and Sunday afternoon was wonderful.
Yes, I agree.
Sunday. I was there for Sunday. It was great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello.
Beautiful music.
Hello, Carol.
Hello. How is everybody?
Good.
Well, Friday night we were able to do something a little special with the help of a little extra technology.
It was wonderful.
Yes, it was.
Thanks. Yeah, it was it sounds silly to say, but like shocking and like it was shocking how much I had forgotten what it's like to sing with another voice. Like with a second voice at the same time. Like, it's just kind of crazy, right?
I'm sorry, I just hit share the screen because I wanted to see everybody and it came up different. How do I fix that? Let me try this.
I unshared your screen.
you need to hit gallery view. Hit gallery view.
It's on the top right.
It just says view. Is that gallery?
Yes, you click on that and then you'll see gallery view.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Hang on this lovely wet and greening morning. See like little shades of sort of like this haze beginning of red and green on the trees. If you looked closely, you might not see it, but like if you take in the whole view, the bigger view, you can start to see the changes that are happening. So I'm gonna start with a poem. It's called Every Person Needs Egypt by Amnon Rybak, originally written in Hebrew, translated by Reuven Greenwald. Every person needs to have their own Egypt, to draw themselves out of it like Moses, strong-armed and with bared teeth. Every person needs dread and great darkness and consolation and promise and saving, so to know how to look to the heavens. Every person needs a prayer, just one, to be with them fluently on the lips. Every person needs to be bent over one time. Every person needs a shoulder. Every person needs to have their own Egypt, to redeem themselves from it, from a house of bondage, to go out in the middle of the night to the wilderness of fears, to march straight into the water, to see it open up to each side in front of them. Every person needs a shoulder on which to carry Joseph's bones. Every person needs to stand up straight. Every person needs to have their own Egypt and Jerusalem and one long journey to remember forever in the soles of their feet. So as we are coming up to Pesach, so I'm curious what you hear in that poem. What do you take from that poem? I know I'm making you not just listen, huh?
I take that life is a journey and it has all kinds of parts to it and times of neediness and times of support, of taking and giving. I just feel it's about life, and life is not easy or perfect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I think there's an idea there. I think we have a tendency to think Joe Schmo's life is better than my life. But it's not. Every person has a burden, no matter what it looks like on the outside. The soles of their feet have the mark. It's a good metaphor.
And he says every person needs to have their own Egypt, right? Every person needs to have their own Egypt.
You have to acknowledge.
I think though, if you have something, you know, the hard parts in life, or make you appreciate the better parts after, you know, going through something, that you can really, really appreciate the good if you've had the bad.
Another thing is you think something might be bad for you, but if you look at someone else that's got it much harder than you, then your problems aren't as difficult for you. I have a friend in the neighborhood with a special needs kid that's like 20 some years old, and it's a burden for the two parents and the sibling that's left home to take care of this child, who's a young adult. So I see what they go through. And things like staying home and not going to the grocery store aren't so bad, if you look at what they have to deal with everything. So everybody has different ways of coping, and everybody has different things that are burdens to them.
That's true. I don't think that's what he's saying. I don't think he's actually comparing. I think that he's actually not comparing. You can read a piece in the New York Times today on disenfranchised grief. It'll be another discussion. Grief, not sort of like socially unacceptable grief, like their burden is worse than mine. So mine's not so bad, but that's a different conversation. Because I don't think he's saying that. I don't think he's at all comparing. Every person needs to have their own burden, not just to get through, not just for appreciation of what is, but actually in order to grow, in order to have change, right? From both joy and hardship. Then that's what we remember of the souls of our feet, is that we actually have to be present to both of them, not just wait to get through the bad stuff to get back to the good stuff, but to be present in all of it. Which is a challenge.
Many years ago, my ex-husband was in his mid-late 20s, and something happened at work, and one of his mentors said to him, "You need to have a failure. In order to have a different attitude, to see things differently, you needed to experience life."
So I think that that's important, to not just push away the discomforts and the bad things, but to know that they are part of that experience, and growth and change come from both joy and hardship. So I brought that this morning because I'm thinking about order and disorder, changes everywhere. So Seder, right? We're going to be somehow in all different ways coming to Seder again in a little over a week. And Seder, of course, means order. So we're gearing up for this holiday in which, on the one hand, order and expectation is embedded in the holiday, right? That is the, that's our whole telling. And yet, of course, our lives may do feel like they're in some partial to complete state of disarray these days. And each day is not necessarily bringing clarity, or the clarity that we're hoping for, right? It's bringing a changed understanding, a new piece of news, no answer, like this ongoing sense of impermanence. And so Pesach, the arrival of Pesach, is placing us squarely in the paradox between order and disorder. So I thought our practice this morning would be a little bit more about being with change and impermanence as a practice. So for a moment, we could think about, I thought we would think first about, like, what is enduring and what changes? The list of what's enduring is actually quite short. We might want it to be longer, but really, what's endure, and you can add to my list if you think there's something else, but my list of what's enduring are the values that we hold that guide us, the long memory and heritage that comes to us both personally in our personal constellations and then in our communal constellations, and love that we share and have shared with family and friends. Beyond that, I think almost everything in our lives changes and grows. It morphs and develops, it ebbs and flows. And what we might want to find, we might find ourselves wanting to grasp onto the solidness of circumstances that we perceive to be unchangeable. They change all the time. And even we change, we hope, and grow over the years. Think about how many versions of yourself have come and gone over the days, the months, the years. I mean, we grow from baby to child to adolescent to adult to, you know, to mature human being. Like, we're just by virtue of our aging, we change, and hopefully inside we are in a process of growth. But change brings us face to face with impermanence, the impermanence of life. And this could really breed, you know, discomfort, anxiety, terror, anger, all kinds of things. So we talked last week about our to-do lists and considering moments to pause and note an accomplishment, like along the journey, not just beginning and end, but each moment has its sense of wholeness and completeness if we stop and pay attention. Kind of a bit, I think, of an antidote perhaps to reframe the experience of endless change, right? To be present in the current moment. So we may find ourselves yearning for what will be still, what we want to have happen, what we want to plan for our future. But truly, we can only surmise what that might be. And it could pull us to being very reactive, rather, you know, a sense of groundlessness, a sense of a perceived sense of groundlessness, right? I want something, I'm not there yet, by trying to stop things from changing. But I don't know that we get really far with that kind of perception. And as human beings, I think, you know, many people, not all people, some people actually thrive more on change, but I think most human experience, even for an instant, is change is unpleasant. Even change for the better can be momentarily pleasant and then bring more unpleasantness for us. Like, you get a new job and you start and it's great, and then maybe you start to worry, like, am I really up to the task? Can I really do this? Then there's the stress, it shifts itself around. and with a new job, maybe you're earning more money and so everything's okay, but then you start to have money worries again. Or when a baby comes, there's excitement and there's worry. Like, what if am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Do I have any clue of what I'm doing? So like we tend to, but that's our perceptions, right? Those are the ways that we spin for ourselves, the stories. Because the truth is, we know very little about what will be. Really, we can only know what is right now. So in this order disorder, if we notice, endings and beginnings are constantly happening in life, like from our bodies, skin cells dying and regenerating, right? The air, every breath of air that we take is a different compilation of stuff, right? It's not the same. Everything is change. And we, by definition, are creatures of evolution, right? We're here because of our ability over eons of time to adapt to changing circumstances. So why do we struggle so much with that adaptation? Because it's kind of ironic, right? We evolve through fresh experience, and yet we often cringe when that change comes our way, or that those forces of change and impermanence come our way. And Pesach is a time of rebirth. Pesach is a time of spring. We came on and people were talking about seeing spring and buds and cherry trees, and, right? Pesach is the spring festival, right? It's connected to the earth and the time. It always comes in the spring. It doesn't move on the lunar calendar all year. It has to be in the spring. Because part of that is that change consciousness, right? Slavery ends, a new consciousness of what it will mean to be free. The end of the change of the seasons. There's so much that in Pesach that is about, I think, trying to help us become present to that river of change that exists within us all the time, if we pay attention to it and can harness it in a different way rather than feeling flooded by it. Letting that set for a minute. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who is the founder of the Musar movement, 19th century Lithuania, modern Musar, he makes a comment about the four children, the four sons in the Haggadah, right? The purpose, remember, of the four children is to remind us in this telling of our retelling and retelling of our story and of our communal story, of our Passover stories, that we have to do it in many different ways. There's not just one exact version of the story, that people hear things differently, we tell things differently. And while we have to tell the big picture of the story, we have to use many different lenses and tools to be able to explore that and explain that. So he writes, each of us have all four children inside of us. In the course of our lives, or even in a single day, we might play all four roles. At one moment, we are wise, giving wise counsel to our friends and making good decisions. But in the next, we might well be wicked, caught up in the pointless, rebellious contempt of something good or cynical. At times, we are all simple, characterized by naivete or innocence or gullibility. And there are times when we don't know what to do because we are bewildered or clueless or dull. So can we hear all the answers in the Haggadah applying to us as we are in this river of endless change, of order and disorder, back and forth? Can we stay in the stream of the present rather than seeking out some elusive solid ground, some perceived solid ground somewhere else, right? It will be better, we'll feel better, we'll do better, we'll be more at ease. Can we just become curious about what is here, right, in the present? What is in front of us? What is around us wherever we are sitting right now? noticing the shapes, the sounds. So fine-tuning our present curiosity, shapes and sounds and colors and textures and smells, and allowing ourselves to just take in that experience through all of our senses. And by being attentive, noticing, staying with what we are experiencing right in the present moment, the external senses, the internal experience, the emotions that we're with, noticing them, being with them, not pushing them aside, not over perceiving them, but just recognizing that that is truth in this moment. Can we better ride the waves of order and disorder? Rather than, you know, peering around the corner, looking, hoping for something better, hoping for something different, trying to see what's coming, to move for a closer look into what's happening right now. And knowing that even when we do that, what we see is going to be subject to change. What we even think we want is probably going to be subject to change too. So I want us to sit with this idea that, of the flow of order and disorder, of the experience of each of us being in our own Egypt, but that there's growth and potential in Egypt and Jerusalem, as the poet finishes, like how we can feel and be with all of that. And notice when that's really uncomfortable for us, but without trying to move out of that place, to just sort of see what wisdom, as Rabbi Salanter writes, arises from all of those lenses that are inside of us. So we're gonna do perhaps a little longer sitting practice today that I'm gonna walk us through. So I invite you, first, before we start, are there any questions or anything you want me to clarify, or clarify my ramblings? So find a comfortable place that you're sitting. Looks like you're all sitting, so I won't say standing or perhaps lying down. And just make sure you're not holding anything too tight. So however you're able, move your head just a little from side to side. Not too fast, sort of move with the rhythm of your breathing. You can keep your eyes open for a moment and just look around at the space that you are in. Notice that space. Notice the colors, the shapes, the dimensions of the room. There's a window, the elements of nature. There's so much data out there. Just sort of see all that's there. And then as you take that in, hold that. Just let that be in with you, and you could rest your eyes. Either a lowered gaze or eyes closed. Just allow your breathing. Be really present just in your breathing. Notice where your mind is. Notice where your body and space is. Notice your breath. Is it rapid or slow? Shallow or deep? Easy or labored? Just notice. No judgment. Feel gravity rooting you, rooting your body, connecting it to the chair or the sofa. And that connected to the floor, to the earth. Notice that solid connection. And in this stillness, you might notice little, almost imperceptible movements in your body that you would not have noticed before, a vibration somewhere, bigger movement. Perhaps your body is swaying slightly, soothing itself. Notice where in your body you might find a place of ease or a place of rest. That place is your anchor. You can return to it at any time. Begin to notice your emotions, your emotional body. Is it present or absent? Without getting caught up in the narrative of your emotions, without needing to make sense of anything. Note where there might be contraction or tightness, heat or cool. And if you're starting to create or notice narratives around your emotion, can you come back to that place in your body that was your anchor, your place of ease? Ever-changing, order and disorder. Our emotional experiences. They get bigger or smaller when we pay attention to them. Like a child, does giving it attention actually allow it to dissipate? Like a child's temper. In your emotional experiences, can you see the the impermanence of them. The flow of fear and sadness, of joy, of happiness, of grief, as waves roll in and they roll out again. Notice for yourself when emotions roll in, is your tendency to grasp, cling, identify, push away? What would it feel like to know that it will arise and it will pass? Might you find anchor and ease again in that place you discovered earlier in your body, a fingertip, an arm, a low back, a foot, that you can return to. A vantage point to be a witness for yourself. A witness to your own experience. We hold emotions in our bodies. Note where you hold yours. There lightness or heaviness in your face. A lump in the chest. An uplift of energy, a rush of warmth. That sinking in your belly. Or the lightness in your feet. disorder can be disconnectedness from ourselves. Can you give some attention to your body to reflect upon where in your body you feel sadness when you feel sadness? Where do you feel joy when you feel joy? Where in your body do you feel grief when you feel grief? Where in your body do you feel excitement when you are experiencing that? Begin to pay attention to the physical sensations in our body when we have emotional experiences. Heightens our attention to those experiences. Allows us and encourages us to notice that it is a whole experience, body and spirit. That wholeness is a sense of order. An internal order. Not to be clung to. But in knowing the wholeness of ourselves, we might better ride the waves of change. So the practice that I leave you with for the week is the idea of working almost to integrate ourselves. We often pay attention to our body. We may pay attention to the narrative and the emotional experience inside of us. We don't always pay attention to the fact that they're really linked. And that, as a mindfulness practice, can help us to restore for ourselves an internal order, not the external order that we can't control in life, but as we can cultivate that sense of who we are, then we can go through Egypt, we can have our own Egypt, and we can also have our own Jerusalem. We can feel all of that and gain wisdom and into who we are, each of us, and how we can go through the experiencing each day of our lives in the present. That gives us a little bit that is something that is actually enduring. That experience of ourselves is in fact enduring. So that's what I will leave you with, unless there are any questions or comments.
I have a question. Would you please repeat the title of the poem that you introduced this morning?
Every Person Needs Egypt.
Thank you.
A good way to look at the present, I think it helps. I think you turn the focus into staying at the present part and understanding the pros and cons and the negatives and the positives, and I think it'll help with mindfulness. Okay, thank you.
Well, have a great day.
Thank you
very much.
Stay dry.
Yes.
Keep well. Keep dry.
Yes.